every now and again Jesus shows his teeth. And every now and again, it's really important for us to see that he flosses. Because if you treat Jesus as some kind of meek and mild figure, we will never really know him on a real personal level. In that one of the deepest ways of getting to know somebody is not just to know them when they're nice, but you can also know their heartache. And to share their heartache is an important way to appreciate somebody as a person. And this is one of the things that I'm privileged as a priest, is I'm usually thrust into somebody's life, not when times are good, but when everything has just gone to crap. You know, like somebody's died, somebody's sick. That's the first time I usually meet somebody when all of their hopes and dreams are crushed. And then the whole task is to help them, in a sense, rebuild. And that is, believe it or not, my great pleasure, because then so much of the nonsense of life is just gone. You know, all of the superfluous questions, all the superfluous concerns are all disappeared, and then what the person has lived for becomes inextricably clear. So Jesus says that one of his primary desires is for the little ones to come close to him. And that anyone who puts a stumbling block between them and him, well, their fate is pretty clearly marked out. And there's a number of different ways in which we can do this. So one of the ways in which we're often on guard against is unnecessarily putting up things that would prevent somebody from, say, coming into the church. And we call them rules and regulations, etc. But there's another way in which we put a stumbling block between the little ones and the Savior, and that's by never telling them about him. And I think this is more the problem today, and it's not because we're not necessarily telling people about Jesus, but we're not telling people about how we come to him, how we come into a deeper relationship with him. And the way in which I saw this playing out in the last century, by listening to people and by reading all of the documents, that would be ridiculous, but reading a good number of documents that have come out of these periods, treating them not as informative, but just as primary sources. How did people talk about faith for the last century? And more often, it's been, if you have God at the center of your life, he will bless you and you will have a happy life. But what was the gospel we heard just a little while ago? That unless you go with him to his passion, to Jerusalem with him, suffer and death, we will never truly be his disciples. How did there just get this dramatic disconnect between what Jesus says and what a lot of the disciples interpreted him to be? Well, it's also because sometimes Jesus hides himself. Because the reality of who he is too domineering. Domineering, that's a bad word. But too powerful. Too full of presence. And so he does, in a sense, give us the diet version. But our desire should be to have the full version of who he is. And to be ready to follow him when he calls us. And another way in which we can see, in a sense, the duplicitousness of our motives is something that James points out with a great amount of clarity. He points out that how on earth can we be true disciples of God when the people that work for us, when we commit all of these social acts of injustice? And this morning, I had a mango for breakfast. And then, in retrospect, when I think about these things, it is unnatural for a Canadian to be eating a fresh mango. I do have a big pile, I like mangoes. I do have a big pile of dried mangoes from the Philippines inside my house. That is a little bit more appropriate. But for us to live in a world where the entire world brings all of their food to us, and a slight fluctuation in grocery prices can have an impact on us, imagine the impact it has on somebody who grows those mangoes, for whom 50 cents Canadian is a big deal. What we're doing is we're creating a world culture where, in a certain ways, and I have no idea how to fix it, by the way. That's why I told you about my mangoes. Because we live in a world where the whole system is now beginning to shaft the poor. We're just being involved in the society, and there's nowhere you can go to be safe from it. I can understand, I don't really agree, but I understand the guy that wants to live in the woods and have a gun and just say, stay off my land. Because the world is becoming so all-encompassing that there's no place for reprieve. And what the Christian should do is to know that if God truly wants us to help people come into a deeper contact with himself, then all of these injustices must be moved away for the sake of the people. For if we go to God and say to him, I know you wanted us to care for people, but we didn't because, you know, jobs. Or we didn't because, you know, I wanted to maintain my standard of living. Or we didn't because, you know, we wanted to keep our way of life. If you love your own kids, and somebody talked like that to you after they harmed your kids, I'm pretty sure the first temptation is to slap them upside the head. When the judgment of God happens, he will treat the way in which we harmed each other, the way in which we would deal with somebody harming our kids. Now, the reason yesterday I wanted to explore that question of being a Christian being stuck between two truths is this is our other problem. We de-emphasized God because we grew sad about the actual ability of humanity to get close to him. That was something that was rampant, especially in the early 20th century, when it was in vogue to deny miracles and to deny God's action and presence in the world, because it was unbecoming of God to be involved in our world. So we're going to make a good one on our own. Well, we've seen the fruits of that. But we've also saw the fruits of when religion goes crazy. So we got stuck. So there's actually a miracle that happened on Monday. Well, it didn't happen on Monday. We heard from it on Monday. But we didn't have a mass. So I was waiting to bring it out. So I'm just going to read it to you. Jesus, Peter, and James, and John came down the mountain. This is after the Transfiguration. To rejoin the other disciples. When they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and some scribes arguing with them. When the whole crowd saw Jesus, they were immediately overcome with awe. And they ran forward to greet him. He asked them, what are you arguing about with them? Someone from the crowd answered him, teacher, I brought you my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak. And whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not do so. Jesus answered them, you faithless generation, how much longer must I be among you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him to me. And they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. It has often cast him into the fire and into water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, have pity on us and help us. Jesus said to him, if you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes. Immediately the father of the child cried out, I believe, help my unbelief. When Jesus saw that the crowd had come running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, you spirit that keeps this boy from speaking and hearing, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. After crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he was able to stand. When Jesus had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could we not cast it out? He said to them, this kind can come out only through prayer and fasting. Now, one of the things that I also have noticed from that early 20th century is that when people saw words like demon, etc., they just said, oh, that's just a bunch of old world mumbo jumbo. Maybe the way in which they interpreted that was a little bit too rigid and slightly too literal. But for crying out loud, When we look at a lot of the young people that grow up in today's world, the symptoms are exactly the same. Anger, rage, fury, mute, and then rigidity. If we look at a lot of young people, these are the symptoms that they are exhibiting because this is the world they live in. And how long have they had it? From birth. I've seen it too many times in my lifetime, and my heart breaks. They've never been loved, they've never been cared for, they don't know what life is about. They're told that their only value has to come with their work value, their only sense of decency comes from what they do for a living, and whether or not they get married to somebody successful. All of these things just imprison the soul. And Jesus is the one that can set the child free, but even the parents are even doubting what Jesus can do for the child. I've met many parents that have divided attention when it comes to church and to other lives because they don't think that a wholehearted attachment to Christ can be good for their kids, and so they have to kind of spatter out his life all over the place. The symptoms are amazingly all there. And most importantly, at least for me, why on earth are the apostles useless? They're not in prayer, and they're not fasting. How can we change a society gone corrupt if we are attached to it? Fasting teaches us what's important. It disciplines the heart and the mind. I did it reverse, but the mind and the heart, so that we might actually know what's important and be willing to put the other stuff to the side. Maybe if it's causing too much injustice, I have to give up my love of mangoes. I have to really think about this one. Maybe if it's causing too much injustice, I might have to give up my love of coffee. That's even more scary. But if I am not willing to make the sacrifices, then my prayer is ineffective. The easiest modern example is when I hear people praying for vocations, and the moment that there's the rumbling that their kid might be called, they pull them back. If we want to know why the church has not borne fruit, I think the answer is pretty clear. We weren't planting any seeds. If we want to know why our children have become rigid and tight and clenched, it's because we're not giving them any space. If we give them God as their ultimate good, it gives them room to fly. But we have to believe ourselves that it's worthwhile. That dad, obviously, is not a perfect dad. No parent is. But he at least had the presence of mind to trust Jesus with his kid and to trust Jesus with his lack of faith. I find that very encouraging. For priests are going to screw up a lot. Parents are going to screw up a lot. We are going to screw up our own lives a lot. But we don't have a God of justice alone. We have a God of mercy who came not to reward those good people who did everything right, but to set free the child who has been burdened and enslaved from their youth.